Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey guys, welcome to Questions You Have, Answers I Give. I am Steel Saunders and I do love Star Wars. And this is our Patreon Q&A, but it is episode 75, which is divisible by 3. So it's also on the normal feed for everyone else to hear and maybe be tantalized to spend or support with $3 a month and hear all our bonus content, which is there is a fair bit of late. Today's episode, we're going to be doing questions pertaining to episode 232 of Steel Wars, the scoring The Rise of Skywalker, which the previous main episode, which is on all the feeds, where what I did, if you haven't heard it, is I'm watching The Rise of Skywalker by what I think the DVD or the Blu-ray chapters will be. Like, so just chunks of the film, and I'm reviewing them, giving them a score out of 5 independently to see what my, apart from the parts I don't like in the film, how much do I like the parts I love in the film? So just another way to look at, rating a movie. Is it the best way to rate a movie? No. But it's been super fun to sort of review and go in depth on each sort of chapter. And it has been interesting that I'm doing it by act. And so we just did the first act, the first of 3 acts. And I'm a 4 out of 5 at the moment. So it's looking pretty sweet. Although we've got some bumpy chapters to get through, so I have a feeling there will be some low scores as well as some high. So it'll be interesting to see how it all works out. So we've got a bunch of questions about that episode that will prompt, I'm sure, even more Star Wars. That's what I liked about doing the chapter thing, was it sort of gave some topics to blither about, apart from, the latest Star Wars news, all that stuff. So let's get into the questions from our very beloved patrons. Maria, OMG, I guess I'm stupid by looking at the title. I assume Steel would be talking about the music in the movie. I didn't notice the ribbon. I assumed Rey was feeling something in the Force. I wasn't able to follow the scoring. Ahsoka was crying. Now, I'll go backwards here. And then maybe I'll go to the front. But I just want to clarify for everyone, Ahsoka is Maria's daughter. Because when I read that, when I was just opening the file, I wasn't able to follow the scoring. Ahsoka was crying. It's like, oh, I didn't hear Ahsoka crying during that bit. That's odd. And then I'm like, I'm too much in my Star Wars universe. So the title of the episode was the scoring The Rise of Skywalker. And I sort of did think that maybe people would think that I was trying to be a very, very, very poor man's David Collins. A poor man's Eric Struthers trying to do a poor man's David Collins. Eric Struthers is very good about the music. And I figure it's episode 75 of this sub-podcast. So every 25 episodes, we've got to mention Eric. Or I don't know. He's got all these rules about every 25 episodes. I don't know what's going on. Oh, I should actually point out, while we're talking Eric Struthers, if you're a patron, he's looking for more people to do Struthers Wars episodes to where people talk about their favourite bits of this podcast and then their Star Wars fandom and tell stories, just another way to generate Star Wars stories. But Eric is looking for people to do those with for the upcoming months. So if you're keen and want to get on the pod, get in contact. Or maybe just comment in the Patreon messages to this episode, and I'll let Eric know when someone's talking about Struthers Wars. Yes, so anyway, scoring The Rise of Skywalker, I did think that maybe people would think it was about music, but it was so, I couldn't think of a way to explain what I was doing. I could have wrote rating, but it's, I don't know, I feel like it's a score. It's a sports event. This is my sports. We've just had the first third. It's, hockey has three thirds, doesn't it? Ice hockey? This is the Stanley Cup of movie watching. Stanley Cup, I think, is ice hockey. I'm going out on a limb here, you guys. And Maria didn't notice the ribbon. So this was the scene where just before they're going to leave the Resistance base and head off to Bassana, Ray's just looking into the forest, just having a stare. But then when I was reviewing the chapters, I noticed that she's looking at the red ribbon. It's like it sort of pans down too quick, but in the tree is that red ribbon from the training montage. So I'm glad so when I saw it, when I was watching the chapters, because that it always stood out to me how strange it was. She was just staring into nothing. I was like, was there meant to be a force ghost there or something? Like, what's up with those bushes? Is she just like still getting over seeing all this green after, you know, a couple years? But there's a ribbon. So there you go. I'm glad Maria was with me in not seeing something. And I'm sorry you weren't able to do the scoring along with me because of Ahsoka crying. I definitely hear where you're coming from. I hear where you're coming from, Maria. We're teething at the moment. And, whew, great times. Catherine Neen, our good buddy, says, I didn't notice the red ribbon. Ding! Another point for me. Or that my podcast did. It took 2 hours and 15 minutes to at least point out a ribbon in Star Wars. So it was worthwhile for that, you guys. And she always heard ghouls. Okay, so this was when the Knights of Ren walked past those First Order stormtroopers. And one of them goes, Knights of Ren. And the other one guy goes, Moles. Moles. Cools, fools, cool, goals, ghouls, as a reply. Now, it does seem like it's ghouls, which I feel like is the best of all the mishears. Like, I heard cool. That's what I thought it was. And then someone had me convinced it was goals. And that was terrible. Like, I thought cool was just like, oh, it's just a bit modern day. But goals was terrible. Like, it was modern day that was going to date. So ghouls is, that's a classic word. That the ghouls have been around for eons, from what I hear. I think he should have said nothing. I think both of them shouldn't have said anything to each other and just look at each other, because it just seems like they say it too close to them. It just happens too fast. And then Catherine also says, please tell me there's a spreadsheet and charts to graph your scoring, and that you are also recording your pluses and minuses of each chapter so that we have both quantitative and qualitative data. Oh, those two, quantitative and qualitative, I know I learnt that at school, but I'd have to Google. I'd have to hit Wikipedia to remember what those two meant. There's a very shoddily hacked into sketchbook or notebook that as I watch each chapter, I just jot down things that happen, things to talk about, and then I immediately write my score. And then the score alone has been put into an Excel sheet. So I'm just not, like, I love stats and math and all that sort of stuff, but I'm not organized enough to get these spreadsheets and charts going for you, Catherine. Although it would be interesting to see, like, a bar graph of each, like, to see if it's a steady up and down of me liking and disliking things, or it does go from 5 to 1 to 5 to 1. But thanks, Catherine. I hope you are well. And I'll just like these ones so I know I've answered them. Or heart, I love them. Catherine, I love that you didn't notice the red ribbon and that you always heard ghouls. Thomas Sutton says, this is a great idea. I'd love to hear you do one for each film. I'm thinking about it, but in a better format, an even more convoluted format, and maybe bringing guests each episode. So, it'd be a very big project because there is so many chapters. I was thinking about doing them for each chapter and making that a show. But we'll see. Let me know what you think. Thomas continues, it has been confirmed by people in countries where the film is subtitled that the troopers are saying ghouls. There you go. What I want to see is when it's subtitled, and then, you know, you can subtitle it back to English. Like, just say, like, in Korea, it's like it comes up with their version of what ghouls is. Is the English, like, it's often like a very sort of close to, but sort of like interestingly or funnily worded, like, reimagination of that sentence. So I want to know what they're sending back to us. Ghouls. You mentioned that you thought the humor there didn't work, but that's because it's not supposed to be funny. I think the troopers are actually creeped out by these guys. But that sort of fits with my re-edit, my fan edit of the scene where they don't say anything. They just look at each other. That's more creeped out to me than going, Knights of Ren. Ghouls, like, I don't know. And I guess my memory of it is quite Pepsi Max. I feel like they're in a Pepsi Max advertisement. Natoran, ghouls, slam it. Yeah, so that's interesting though, that like I sort of think the intent of that is to humor the audience, but you see it as it's adding weight to the legend of the Knights of Ren. So interesting that we read it totally different ways. It's funny, the something that I instantly pops into my head with seeing like something humorous or whatever, totally different ways, is when Luke tosses the lightsaber in The Last Jedi. People read that, like, even if both people think it's sort of meant to be a little bit humorous, they take it in totally different ways, and the tone of the humor and the meta-ness of the humor. So yeah, comedy is subjective, you guys. King Tom Chansky chiming in from our Page Wars podcast, where he tells me what happens in books and comics because I don't have time to read them. It's super fun. I actually should give a plug. He's interviewed, if you're a King Tom fan, he's interviewed on Around the Galaxy, the Star Wars interview podcast. So I had a great time listening to that yesterday while I worked away. So check that out. But King Tom coming through, validating me with this. I have seen it 12 times and I hadn't noticed the ribbon. I'm informing King Tom. This is special, you guys. This is special. Rob Graves. Handsome Rob. Great idea for the podcast, Steele. I find listening to this almost therapeutic because I feel I'm on a very similar wavelength with you with this film, although I may be slightly harsher. Some stuff I really didn't like, but other stuff I did. Overall, I found the film disappointing. It just didn't have the same impact on me as The Force Awakens and The Last Jedi. I also get quite annoyed by a lot of the choices that JJ made that were so obviously an attempt to pander to the lowest common denominator of the fandom. Like giving Rose the Poochie treatment. Ah, oh, great reference. Like giving Rose the Poochie treatment and writing her out in a really dumb way. Anyway, I don't like being negative about Star Wars. There's enough of that going around. So I choose to enjoy the things I like about the film and let the things I don't slide. Looking forward to the next episode and can't wait until you get to the Rey Palpatine reveal. Oh, man. I might go full YouTube on that chapter. All right, good. I like that I'm helping you, Rob. What I haven't heard much feedback from is people that love the film. I would like to, you know, if they're not so annoyed by my more critical chapter reviews, what they think of that. Sometimes it's just like, oh, that sort of stuff doesn't bother me. It doesn't bother me. Which I've got tons of stuff that, you know, people don't like. And I'm like, oh, it doesn't bother me. It's fine. One of those things is not CGI clone troopers. So, oh, my God. But, yeah, I'm with you, Rob. I also get a bit frustrated by the choices that JJ made that I, you know, perceive was sort of... It's like it's reacting to a checklist of complaints about the previous film. The other thing that is sort of, you know, it's just frustrating is my perception that, like, JJ sort of changes the sort of motivations and the arcs of characters sort of mid production of the film. And I guess that's, as someone that doesn't make films but wants to believe in them, you know, I want to be immersed in the Star Wars story. It's frustrating that it's not like a rock solid story. You know, like, scenes will change and lines and stuff, but just, it's the story to him is so malleable. You know, take even, like, in The Force Awakens, you know, Maz Kanata was going to go to Resistance Base and hand over the lightsaber to Leia, and that and had, like, force powers. There's the deleted scene of her, you know, making the rocks tumble on the First Order stormtroopers. So, like, yeah, it's just, and like, that's what I'm, like, it's part of filmmaking, I'm sure. But as a fan that, you know, wants to believe that these stories are sort of, when they come to the creator, they're sort of more locked in, and yeah, I don't know. It's very romanticizing the myth-making process. But yeah, I would, you know, you sort of want to have that, or I don't know. That's my, how I'm, you know, some people might enjoy the turns and stuff. And, you know, with the rumors of how things shifted in this film, like we do know the opening was completely changed, with the, who were meant to have the Oracle and all that sort of stuff. It's, you know, you wonder how much was changed and if the, like, much of the conclusion was changed, because, like, that, if there was a dramatically, and I don't know if there is. I do love Star Wars conspiracy theories, though. Happy ones. Not angry ones. Although, I think what I perceive as happy is because the angry ones are so angry. And the happy ones are actually angry, but they're just tame. So, anyway. Like, if there was a dramatic change in the end, like someone was going to die that didn't, or live that didn't, yeah, something big like that, then that would sort of be, from my point of view, disappointing as a fan, because it's like, oh, that's like a dramatic change. Like, or even, was someone going to go bad or go good? And they just didn't do it. Or they just did. But that wasn't always the end. Like, that to me is, like, I wish it wasn't like that, because I sort of want the ending to be in the creator so, like, jarringly, like, especially the end. Do you know what I mean? I don't know. It's just what you hope for as a naive fan. But thanks, Rob. Carly Taylor, more for the next act or possibly the one after. Do you think Harrison Ford was there with Adam Driver filming? Always looks just off to me. Likely for the final act, but did the red troopers circling the Emperor, clearly different from Sith troopers, are the red troopers circling the Emperor clearly different from Sith troopers? As I think there is a cape and a flatter helmet, yet we don't see them clearly. Not like Lucasfilm to pass up on a different figure. So what's up with that? I think they are. I thought they were sort of more like a combination of Sith trooper and Emperor's Royal Guard. I thought they were more sort of Sith Royal Guards. Than just your basic trooper. but we will review when we watch that chapter. And I don't think you're that on point anymore with Not Like Lucasfilm to pass up on a different figure. So what's up with that? Because it's I've been looking through the Pablo Hidalgo, the visual dictionary, which is always fun, both for great information and just ridiculously, like whatever, little points around a person. There was one that just delighted me, and it was one of those little happy creatures on Pisana, the sort of like piggy, cute little creatures that gives Ray the necklace. She's got her mouth open all happy, and the little arrow pointing to it is like smile emerging from joke she's about to tell or something like that. And I was like, it's so good. I just love the mix of like super like trite, just fluffy, funny things like that. And then, you know, finding out about the Knights of Ren's battle stance and all that sort of good stuff. But yeah, so anyway, my point being, I'm looking through this book and there's just so many figures that they don't make, the way that the market has shrank. You know, I think it's a combination of action figure market has shrunk. Star Wars is like merchandising wise, it has to be less popular now than it was at The Force Awakens. It just has to be based on the amount of stock you see in stores. You know, the space that stores are giving them. And you know what I mean? That's, you know, whatevers. But it probably always was going to surge then, because that was how it worked out. It wasn't like Endgame was sort of like the surge for Marvel, because it had been building up all that time. With, like, the films were coming pretty thick and fast. But for Star Wars to, you know, pick up on the story that people have been waiting to see for 30 years after Return of the Jedi, like, that, when you think about it, was most likely going to be the peak. Because you've got the peak amount of interest in people wanting to know immediately what Han Solo is like coming back.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
And I guess they could have built on the fan base, but like, and then you could think that maybe the rise of Skywalker would be the biggest. That would be contradicting the other two trilogies, where the highest grossing is the first, the second one is third, and then the last one is second. And at the moment, this has been like a sliding scale down. And I wonder if that is because of the bump from The Force Awakens and Rogue One. But anyway, my point being about it may have been always likely that The Force Awakens was the highest grossing one. And that's because there was so much nostalgia in people like flocking to the cinema, there'd be a lot of different interpretations of what that nostalgia should be. Like, which was what happened. Do you know what I mean? The first one got away with it pretty well because it was so deep on in nostalgia. But then the next one, The Rise of Skywalker, The Last Jedi, that's when it sort of couldn't keep going on that heavy nostalgia trip. It had to do something else. And when it did something else, half the people loved it, half the people didn't. And I don't know if it's half and half. And then definitely JJ tried to tape it all back together with like a lot of heavy nostalgia. Hey, I was reading this right in Pablo's book, and the Tantive IV, the Rebel Blockade Runner, is the one that Princess Leia got captured in A New Hope. And it explains that it was going to get destroyed because Tarkin wanted it to look like an accident or something. But then the Emperor disbanded the Senate before it did have to get destroyed. And so then the Senate was disbanded. There was no point in destroying it because they weren't going to lie about that anymore. They just didn't have to answer to anyone. So then someone had it in a garage and then later on gifted it back to Princess Leia. Now, I don't know. I just wonder if that's going to bring back warm memories. Good things didn't happen in that blockade runner for her and her crew. But yeah, it's interesting how they explained how it came back. Because when I, you know, it was in the trailer and stuff, I figured it must have been a different one because it really didn't make sense how it could be in that Star Destroyer and then somehow get back to her. So, it's lucky they didn't park it on the Death Star. It's lucky they didn't put it in there. They kept it in the Star Destroyer. Because then it would have got blown up and there would have been nothing to give. Oh, and that would have been, like, same day. Princess Leia, like, loses a planet and her sweet ride, which she's clearly very emotionally attached to and happy to receive it back. But I do have to admire coming up with that story to explain it. And when, like, because it is, like, I read it with a sly grin at the cheekiness of it all. But it's very imaginative how they duck and wove. And I wonder when that got, like, when that story was generated, that backstory. Like, did, you know, JJ instruct the production team, you know, the pre-production team or whatever, to start working on, you know, a Tantive IV set or, you know, big on-set prop? And then after the film's done, they're like, oh, how do we explain this? Or was it in the initial script pitch that it was there and whoever had conceived that it was going to be in the scene had also conceived of the backstory, how it could be in the scene, or it was sort of given out to, say, Pablo Hidalgo. I imagine how this works. I have no idea. Or no real, you know, like, I could be completely wrong. But he sort of looks through the script and goes, ooh, that's a pickle. I'll have to work out that little puzzle. And yeah, I just wonder, I want a documentary about that fact. And Like, does J.J. Abrams know about the gifting of the Tantive IV? What do you guys think about that? Does he know? Does he know about that backstory? Would someone interviewing J.J. Abrams waste precious seconds asking them that for me? That'd be great. I wish I'd asked him that at Celebration. I don't know how I got off onto that conversation. But anyway. Oh, we're talking about figures. Yes. So. Yeah, the line has gotten so much smaller because, you know, Star Wars isn't as popular and it's more widespread, you know what I mean? Like, you've got Lego and Funko Pops gobbling up a lot of retail space and a lot of Star Wars fans' cash. They really hit the jackpot on that one. They're taking a lot of market share as well. So the line has drastically shrunk. Like, they do the vintage collection, which is sort of like hoping to be the best ever version of each figure in the 3¾ scale, and that's sort of like a premium. I don't know if it's $20. Like, I get confused because I see the prices in Australia and America, but I don't like buy them myself, so I haven't felt the sting to remember which price is in which country. And they're on the sort of vintage-looking cards. But just like in a basic kids 3¾-inch line, no figures for this film. Plenty of Black Series. But it seems like, you know, they're not going that wide a berth either. Because I was reading the Pablo book and it got to the Hermit, Lando Calrissian, with his helmet on. And the helmet's like, it's pretty sick. Comes out, this juts out at the back. And it made me flashback to Lando's skiff disguise that he wore all around Jabba's palace. And I remember getting that figure for Christmas when I was a little boy and just thinking it was so cool that he had this helmet he could take on and off. And no buys in the, either scales, figure lineup. And it's just because they just don't go that, like, that wide. Like, I'm sure if you went through a visual dictionary of any of the George Lucas films, like, I would assume, like, actual characters with names, like, easily more than half would have been made into figures throughout the whole book. I could be so off base here. But I feel like I'm not. This is any named character. Not just, like, Imperial officers. But even, I think, all those Imperial officers at the Death Star table got made into figures in some put-together playset, which sounds awesome. Did I just make that up? I know they did a Jedi Council one that made a big circle, which I was sort of at one time considering obtaining, because I think that's a sick scene with little Anakin in the middle. But there is so many characters that would just make amazing figures and just silly one-off figures that aren't even like part of like Snaggletooth. You know, like Hammerhead, all those guys, they didn't have major parts in the film. Like, what about a figure of a removable head Jose figure? Bit harsh, sure, but that would be a sick figure. And it's just, you know, just the state of what kids buy in 2020 and also what fans buy. And bought a lot of stuff. And, like, there is talks that Hasbro, I think their license might run out at the end of the year. and they haven't secured the next license. And, you know, I wonder what would happen if the license got picked up by someone else. Like, I don't, like, collect it, so I don't really have a, you know, a stick in the fight. I don't know. Anyway, but it would be interesting to see what another toy company's interpretation of Star Wars figures would be. I've heard some say there's a possibility, or speculated, that maybe they'll license out the 3¾-inch kids directed line to another toy company. I would be interested to see what, say, Super 7 came up with in that line. I like all their retro figures. They bring out figures for, you know, Alien and, I don't know, Happy Days, lots of different, like, bizarre, I think maybe, like, the Love Boat, but just all these old licenses and stuff. And it looks pretty cool, but I wonder what it would be if it was a Star Wars figure. If I'd definitely be staring at it a bit harder, but it would be fascinating to see what another company, just the whole, like where they'd start with the characters, what characters they'd go for, what scale, you know, what packaging. It would be interesting to see, like, the whole thing sort of, like, burnt down and start again. But I kind of think it'll be steady as she goes. But, yeah, it's kind of... It's just a bummer that action figures, that they saw their peak. And it's hard to imagine them sort of, like, coming back. But they, I guess, when would have action figures been the most popular? I feel like in the 80s. Because, like, He-Man was doing billions. And that's 80s billions, man. So I wonder if that was the peak. And I guess there was less, like, distractions for people, for kids, you know, for their attention. And I wonder how that would compare with maybe, like, the 2000s, when adults were buying with kids. Probably less kids were buying, but then you had the adult buying power as well. If anyone has any information on all this, let me know. I don't know about the thing about Harrison Ford being there with Adam Driver. If anyone knows about that, let me know as well. You say, Carly, that it always looks off to you. Yeah, I think I enjoy it too much to even... I sort of don't even want to think about if they're in the same set while I'm watching it, to, like, you know, try and suss it out, because I just rather sit there and just enjoy how good that scene is. Whew, so good. But if anyone knows about that, you know, it'd be really cool if there was on the Blu-ray or the download or the DVD, a, you know, a little, like, extra about Harrison Ford's return and some of his thoughts and the filming day and him interacting with Adam Driver, like, on set again, hopefully, if he was there, or just interacting with J.J. Abrams, or I don't know, maybe he filmed that scene in a cupboard under a blanket. Which, if you don't know, I think Adam Driver recorded some lines for the film in that circumstance. And people find that distressing, one, because it sounds like very haphazard, that they're doing it in a cupboard rather than in a studio? And also, was it like just redoing lines that didn't get caught properly, or recording new lines that change the story? And then that sort of niggles at your the thing I was talking about before about like that thought that the storyline wasn't rock solid. All right, and we've got John Niswander asking, after going to see the movie again yesterday, I think the Pisana chase sequence is giving a hug or at least a high five to the pod race. Some of those shots when they're racing through those canyon walls are really reminiscent of the pod race, and I think they've maybe have even heard a pod racer sound effect or two thrown in there at the end. First of all, to explain, this giving a hug thing is some term that I used to try to convey that I thought the final film in the saga should sort of give a story shout out to as much of the other films as possible. Now, for instance, I thought it would have been cool to have the Kimonans be the enslaved people trying to clone Snokes along with those evil Sith-looking cloners. I thought that would have been a cool, just like, oh, Attack of the Clones, sick. What was that thing in, like, even in Maz's Castle, when you had all those flags and they meant all different things? I thought that's very sort of Easter eggy, but a bit sort of more in your face. You know, I think the movie should have concluded, and we'll talk about this in the third act, I think the movie should have concluded with Naboo. I felt like that was the, you know, the Tatooine thing, like, could be part of it, but I felt like if you really want to bring it back, I think you should bring it back to the storytelling beginning rather than the release order beginning. So anyway, that's what I mean about giving a hug. I think the Pisana chase was reminiscent of, and you know, you might be able to, you know, it's poetry, it all rhymes, all that good George Lucas stuff. I definitely had pod racing vibes too in the Pisana chase. And also the speeders that they're on kind of remind me of the skiffs from Return of the Jedi. It sort of seems like one has maybe the back of the skiff and the other one has the front of the skiff, and then they've designed other stuff for other parts. But there's definitely, like, with those sort of vanes at the back and stuff, I got little you know, skiff vibes as well. So I definitely think there is a bit of a visual cue from the pod race, perhaps. But, like, do you know what I mean? Like, I don't know if they were like, hey, let's go for some like a pod race vibe in here. But I don't think that's a hug, because it's more of a vibe. You're getting a vibe of the Phantom Menace rather than a storytelling sort of nod or hug. That's why I use that to that. And that's why, even at the end when they're all even if they didn't have a final scene on Naboo, which I will talk about in the third act, I've got this very elaborate close. I think it's beautiful. But even, like, they've got the Star Destroyer getting destroyed above Cloud City. Like, why not have Naboo? And I know in the comics there was Project Cinder, and Naboo got a little bit messed up. But it's been 20, 30 years. The Nabooians would have rebuilt, and maybe they could have incorporated some Gungan technology in their buildings to protect them, perhaps. It'd be nice to see them in big bubbles. That would be cool. Or they could turn off their bubbles. Ah, the bubble could evaporate while the Star Destroyer is getting blown up. They're safe now. They don't need to use their giant Gungan bubble. Yeah, but I don't rate that as a hug because it's more just, you know, like a reminiscent shot sort of thing. You know, like, I think, like, when they get chased out of the ice cave city in the Falcon, like, I think that it reminds me of Return of the Jedi and flying around the Death Star, but it's not sort of like a reference. It's more of just a, hey, hey, hey. So that was our last question on the first act, but when we post up the second part of that, feel free to write a question and we'll go through all those again. That is super fun. I love the Q&As because it gets my Star Wars mind a-working. And we also have a bunch of questions off the last Q&A, which I think I will do tomorrow. And that will be back to a Patreon bonus, a Patreon exclusive. So if you want to follow along with all the bonus content, you get an RSS feed that loads up in your phone like any other podcast. It downloads automatically. It's super sweet. It's just $3 a month at patreon.com/Steel Wars. There's a new Robbo report. There's a couple of new Star Wars Year by podcasts in the last month. Me and Hawes going through Star Wars history. The best. Love Tolkien Star Wars with him. With the tangents. If you think we're staying in 1978 and Star Wars, think again. And yeah, the Robbo reports we've been doing. There's some of them on, I think there's one on the main feed. The rest have been Patreon exclusive. Is we're doing commentaries, just fan commentaries while we watch the Mandalorian episode. So if you've watched it 27 times, here's a new way to enjoy it. And thanks so much for all your support. If you want to check it out, it's just $3 a month. And if that's not your thing, just give us a follow on Twitter and a retweet now and then. Help spread the word. That really helps the podcast, or get on iTunes and write a sweet 5-star review. Thank you guys so much for listening. So appreciate it. And may that force be with you.
That's Ben Mendelsohn, right?
Yeah.
I just thought, I'm just confirming.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.